You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of July 11th, 2017, obviously, and episode number 321. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And hope you survived. Everybody did well last week, Independence Day. It was kind of noisy out here where I'm at, but it's a nice week, and it's nice at doing a show, I guess. You know, I'm in bed early, so it's not that big of a deal for me to do a show. And I have to bring in this news each and every week because things are constantly changing and I want to keep up on this news. And a lot of these stories are quickly evolving. And if I miss a week, we're going to fall behind. And I don't want to do that. I want you, the listener, to keep up with the new and fresh information that's going on out there. And this week, we have some really new and fresh information from Chicago about the Chicago Phantom sightings. Also some new footage, purportedly, of a thylacine, and a lot of news about Amelia Earhart this week in the news, not just paranormal, but all over the place. Probably one of the biggest stories of the week. There was a TV show on Sunday night as well that we'll talk about. If you've not seen it, well, spoiler alert. They didn't find her, but we're going to talk about that show and some of the positives and some of the negatives about that show. It's pretty interesting. If you missed it, I think you can probably still find it on the History Channel somewhere, somehow. And a little bit of conspiracy talk about that. And we'll hit that later in the show. And we'll also have the book of the week and maybe, we'll talk a little conferences, conventions here. But first, I want to let you know that this show is brought to you by Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. And for more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuniversity.org. Got to keep the lights on. Got to pay the bills. So some quick anomalous notes here. Want to let everyone know, if you're a fan of the Paranormal News Insider, you're a fan of Paranormal Experienced, you're a fan of Crypto Kid radio show here on WCJV, you're a fan of the network, WCJV, there's a new app. I love apps. I have too many apps. My phone is like crying every time I turn it on. Why did you jam so many apps into your phone? But this is cool. We have to stay with the cutting edge of technology. And to do that, we need to bring you the show in as many different ways as we can. And you've probably always had the ability to listen to it on your phone, but now there's an app that's going to make it far easier to do this. It's available for you Apple people, as well as those of us that, we like our Android phones. I'm sorry, but I'm just not a big Apple fan. But you can go to the App Store if you're an Apple fan, or the Google Play Store if you're an Android fan, and download this awesome new app. And get involved with the show. Listen to the show. Be involved in the chat room. Get all the latest and greatest information about your favorite shows here on WCJV. So I already listened to it. Sometimes I have to go to bed a little early, but I can fall asleep to the comforting sound of one of our broadcasters. And yeah, great stuff here on this network. So if you're not listening during the week, all these shows that are on here, you're missing out on some great information in the paranormal. And if you're listening to this, thank you. Appreciate that. Getting your paranormal news here each and every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. right here on WCJV. Now, the events listing, paranormal conferences and conventions, I haven't updated it since last week, but nothing has dropped off and I have not added anything, haven't gotten any kind of information. I know right now is a very critical time with a lot of the events that are taking place this fall. I know just before I went on the air, I just got a message here from Ray Goosby about my program, what I'm going to be talking about at his conference coming up in August 19th. I got to respond to him. Not right now. I'll wait till we're done. I have no idea. I think I'm going to talk cryptozoology there. Eh, maybe UFOs. I don't know. We'll see. So if you're interested in adding an event or you're interested in seeing what's going on out there, there's a lot of events. And you can go to paranewsinsider.com and click on the events tab at the top. It's all broken down into essentially ghost conferences, then UFO and cryptozoology. It's separated, but some of the ghost conferences, you will find people there that do other areas of the paranormal, such as cryptozoology or UFOs. So I've just listed it as what the primary focus of that event is. And there's a lot of primarily UFO conferences, conventions, as well as cryptid ones as well. But I can tell you that, a couple of ghost events already this year, I've talked about cryptozoology. So you'll find a lot of these are very well-rounded in a variety of topics. But again, if you're interested in visiting some of these things, which I highly recommend, getting out there, meeting these other people involved in the field, fans of the paranormal, people that do this all the time, get out there, check out this listing. It's one of the best listings, and I'm just saying it from a fan of the paranormal. I've done a pretty okay job. I mean, there's a lot that I don't have on here because I don't have enough information, or I'm not sure if it's something that I want to list, and others I just don't even know about. That's why I rely on you guys, the listeners. If there's something local that I have not been able to find and it's not listed, let me know and I'll get it up there on the website. And if I have time, I will try to mention these shows. If you're really nice to me, I will. I mean, I do that frequently. If you send me a nice email and say, hey, can you please mention this? I will. I'll do it. And if you invite me to speak, I'll definitely talk about it, such as the Kecksburg UFO Festival that's taking place on Friday, July 28th through Sunday, July 30th in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. That's home to the actual fire station there where it takes place. It's very close to the location where a UFO crash back in December of 1965 took place. One of the more controversial ones, I would say even more controversial than the Roswell crash. That's just my personal opinion. Not that being favorite, you know, a favoritism time kind of thing. But if you stand back and you look at these stories, this one is really, really strange. A lot of weird stuff about this. And actual things have been documented versus stories that have popped up 30, 40 years later about Roswell. And the speakers at this event include myself, Ron Murphy, who is a very well-established author, in my opinion, probably one of the best researchers I've read currently on paranormal topics, a variety of paranormal topics, not just one thing, but he branches out into a lot of different things. Also, Colin Schneider, who is a host of the Crypto Kid radio show right here on WCJV every Monday night, will be speaking. Stan Gordon, who is the backbone of this event, will obviously be speaking as well. The speakers are on, it's on Sunday, and I don't remember what time. I think 1 o'clock is the at the EMS building right there in downtown The big downtown Kecksburg. Yeah, well, if you go too fast, you'll miss it. You got to slow down. And we're right there, right in the middle. It's an event beyond all events. This is like a festival, carnival, and paranormal conference all rolled up into one. It's incredible. There's a parade with UFO costumes, cars decorated as UFOs. The Kecksburg Fire Department will parade some of its historical vehicles through there as well. There's a bed race. There's a burnout, Smoke in the Valley burnout contest. That's at 6 o'clock on Saturday. I'm going to be there for that one. I can't wait for that. I love that thing. Fireworks, if it doesn't rain like it did last year. Cornhole tournaments. There's like a hay bale race. There's all kinds of weird stuff going on. Hot dog eating contest. Hot dog eating contest. A UFO hot dog eating contest. I don't know what that is, but I want to be there. Unfortunately, I think it's around the time I got to get ready to speak. So I don't want to stuff too many hot dogs down my throat before I speak. That would be a little awkward. But it's coming up fast. So if you don't have plans that weekend, get out there. It takes place Friday afternoon, 6 p.m. Everything opens up. You can come in and meet me. I'll be there, signing books, selling books, talking about UFOs that weekend. And, obviously ghosts and all that cryptozoology. I did cryptozoology last year, but I didn't speak. I was just, there at a table, which was really, really nice. There was a lot of great people that were there all weekend long. A lot of great conversations. And the wonderful thing about it being 2.5 days is that, you have time to visit with people and they can get more information for you, or you can have, you know, longer conversations. Whereas when you're kind of in a time crunch, you don't really have that kind of time. So come on out and visit. Plenty of time to talk all weekend long at the Kecksburg UFO Festival. And also, I'm going to be at the Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event on August 5th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. I believe that's the 5th annual Strange Encounters event. Stan Gordon will be opening that show at 9:30. And let's see, who else is there? John Ventry will be there right after him. We got people talking about strange weather in Pennsylvania, strange things that people correlate with UFO encounters or paranormal encounters. I'll be there. Eric Altman will also be there. Excited to hang out with Eric Altman again, president of the it's not PA Bigfoot Society anymore, but Colin Schneider will also be there. Forgot about that. Yeah, Colin will be speaking at 5 p.m. at the Strange Encounters event as well. So that'll be cool to hang out with Colin again a couple weeks after Kecksburg. And let's see, August 19th, another event that I'll be at. It's the Goose Project. It's an MS fundraiser, paranormal convention. I love ones that are fundraisers, anything that can help, anything larger than what we are, any kind of charitable type of thing that we can help people, I think is very important to be involved in. So I'm excited to be involved with this MS fundraiser on August 19th. Now, originally it was supposed to take place at Prospect Place Mansion in Trinway, Ohio. It's been moved. It's now at the Bell Nursing Home in Kimbleton, Ohio. I don't yet have a speaker's lineup, but it sounds to me that if I'm getting a message here from Ray about what I'm going to be speaking about, that he's putting that together pretty much as we speak. Well, maybe as I speak, unless you're talking as well. If you're not, if you're talking, you're not paying attention. Thank you. So hopefully I'll have that information about who's speaking. There's some pretty big names that are going to be there. We'll cover that when I have that information. So that's kind of your little mini update on conferences. Most of it, yeah, what I'm involved in. And again, check out paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top, and you can get up-to-date information. There is a couple happening this weekend, one in Moundsville, West Virginia, which is the Moundsville Paracon. Great building, great location. If you've never been there, you got to go there. Really active, in my opinion. Really nice location. My second favorite prison, after Mansfield, of course. The Moundsville Paracon takes place July 15th this weekend. Also, the Ocean State Paracon 2016, July 15th and 16th in Harrisville, Rhode Island. That's this weekend. I don't have anything on the calendar this weekend for UFOs or for cryptozoology. So that's your mini update there. And we're going to jump right into the news and talk about the Chicago Phantom. Again, this is just, I don't even know what to say about this. This is just ongoing. It's not slowing down. It's not stopping. It's just, it just keeps going and going and going. More and more sightings almost every few days, at least once a week. It seems like these reports are pouring in to Lon Strickler, to MUFON, to other UFO researchers, which is odd. but I guess it is a unidentified flying object. So I guess that does kind of fit into that. This latest sighting was recently reported for an event that occurred on June 30th at around 10:30 p.m. And just kind of stopping here, it seems like most of these sightings happen in the evening time. We've had a few that happened during the day, but I'd say overall, a lot of these are happening when it's dark out. 10:30 would be pretty dark. The incident occurred at the 2500 block of North Milwaukee Avenue in Logan Square near a bar, which is ironically enough, called The Owl. The Owl. And the Chicago Phantom, and Chicago Phantom is the name that Lon Strickler has given it. And since I've been using his reports really to talk about it, really not used MUFON or anybody else, I've been pretty much sticking with Lon and communicating back and forth about this. I'm going to use his name because he created that, and I think it's just the right thing to do. But it's been described as an owl. It's been described as some people have used the term Mothman, which I think is I don't know. I don't think I agree with that one. But it's been described as a large bat or a large owl. It seems to me that a majority of these sightings lately have really described this as a large bat-like creature, which includes this sighting that, again, took place on June 30th at around 10:30 p.m. at this place called The Owl. And the witness worked security at the bar called The Owl and was outside having a cigarette when he saw a large bat-like creature flying about what he estimated to be 60 to 70 feet away. And the bat-like creature was flying over an empty lot, which was adjacent to The Owl. The bar called The Owl, and the witness realized it was a bat-like humanoid and was about 5 to 5.5 feet in length with a wingspan that was estimated to be about 8 to 10 feet wide. That's huge. Huge. The body was described as grayish in color, and the head was described as, quote, having a pointed crest extending from the back of its head, similar to a pterosaur, but shorter. Unquote. And the wings were described as, quote, a bat-like membrane, but heavy, like that of a pterosaur, unquote. Huh. So do we have a pterodactyl flying around? Do we have a dinosaur? Well, not a dinosaur, but an ancient creature flying around here? Now the mystery deepens. Well, the witness did not have his cell phone with him. I know that's the question. Did he take a picture of it? He said it was inside charging. Inside charging at the time. Well, that stinks. I mean, most people, when they're smoking cigarettes, they want to check their Facebook feed and stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there. Now, the witness also said that he was startled to see what he saw, but did not get a fear of foreboding like some witnesses have described. And again, Lon Strickler, who is heavily involved with this ongoing case, interviewed the witness and said that this particular witness was, quote, very convincing, forthright, and did not embellish during his account, unquote. And again, what is this thing? Is this just a misidentified large bat? I've never really talked about this that much, but when I was in high school, this is well before I was into the paranormal, a friend of mine and I saw what appeared to be a giant bat flying between houses. It actually turned itself sideways to get through, and we just were baffled. Baffled, my favorite word. We're just staring at this thing like, what was that? So I don't know if it was a trick of the light, shadows maybe. I'm thinking maybe that's what's happening here. Low-flying bats, if they hit the lights a certain way, will make them, the shadows at least, appear very, very large. And it could be confusing people. But this isn't like mass panic. This isn't a front page news in Chicago. It's not like people are all worried about it. I'm sure it's been mentioned a few times. I've not really found too many articles on this particular story, but I don't know. It's just weird. If it was viral and a really major story, then I would think potentially panic or potentially people are just adding this in to get their 15 minutes of fame. But I'm not sure. I really have no – you would think that with 21 sightings that go back to 2011, we'd have a little bit to kind of play with here. But, you know, when I'm looking at this map and I'm staring at this thing and I'm reading through these sighting reports, I mean, there's some things that are a little questionable. And again, I don't want to really mention what I'm seeing to add to some of the potential confusion to this, but just some things that are a little questionable that I'm still playing out to see how they're going to end up falling together in the long run, if this continues to be an ongoing story or not. But again, it's just weird. How can all of these different people collectively misinterpret a large bat, especially from various angles at the same location? More than one. Let's see. There's one, two, three. There's at least three reports here that I'm looking at that happened, or I should say three sets of sightings that have happened at the exact same location. And some of these seem to be from different angles or different views. So that kind of almost throws that out the window. If these are legitimate sightings, really, really weird. I mean, is this just a large-scale prank? Or is there really a large bat flying around Chicago? Or is it something else? I don't know. I'll tell you what, I'll be honest with you. If the hotels weren't so darned expensive, I have a vacation coming up in August. I don't know. I'm kind of thinking about going down there and looking for this thing. I don't know. This could potentially be a huge story if there is a giant bat, which would really be against science because bats don't grow that big. They don't grow 8 to 10 feet wide. Some giant fruit bats are known to be about 4 feet is as large as they can get. And some of the pictures that you see of these giant fruit bats, they're not as big as what they appear because of the way they're photographed. It's kind of forced perspective, so it makes it look like it's a lot larger than what it really is. There's a lot of those floating around. But again, 21 sightings going back to 2011, with three of these 21 occurring back in 2011. And this has been ongoing here since, March 22nd. And June, it's really picked up. And, you know, people are outside, and I kind of figured that around July 4th, there would be a couple because everyone's staring at the sky and, you know, there's fireworks all over the place. And if there is a giant bat, it's going to be spooked. Or if it's even a hoax, then people would know that a lot of people would be out looking around. So I don't know. I haven't really heard anything else. And we'll have to keep our ears and our eyes peeled for that. So I'm going to put the link to this latest story in the chat room. And that's one advantage if you're listening live. And you're in the chat room. Yes, I would be famous. I would be famous if I found the giant bat. And it'd be kind of like Carl Kolchak, who, he would be the guy, I mean, to find this thing. Obviously, it was a TV show, Kolchak the Night Stalker. But he was based, the TV show, not the movies, was based in Chicago, which is kind of cool. Let me also put this map. The interactive map is updated every time there is a sighting. So if you have the original link, that link will also be good throughout time because as sightings occur, Lon will update that map. The interactive map has little red numbers on there. And on the left, you can click on those small descriptions. We'd say like a giant wing, bat wing thing or, you know, just a major portion of that account. You can click on that and it'll give you a larger description, actually the entire what the witness said they saw. So it's really a really handy dandy tool if you're into this ongoing Chicago Phantom case. Really interesting, really weird stuff. I don't know exactly what to think about this. And let's see, we have also in cryptozoology the Tasmanian tiger, also known as the thylacine. And you probably saw this story. There's a video floating around. I would say that probably the biggest story overall in cryptozoology did center on this video uploaded to YouTube on July 5th. The video was shot by a school teacher and author, Paul Day. And he shot a Australian sunrise when all of a sudden a four-legged creature ran across the view. In the video, Paul poses the question of if viewers think this was the long-lost thylacine, as the video was titled, quote, could this be a Tasmanian tiger, unquote. So he's kind of leaning toward that explanation, I would think, by that title. But he stated that he initially thought that it was a fox or a dog, and despite this feeling, that he is leaning toward the thylacine explanation. He states he's not really sure either way as to what it was. Now, he'd been shooting the sunrise near a farm near the city of Moonta on York Peninsula on South Australia with a time lapse. So he was using time lapse for photography. So I know he's taking a photo every couple of seconds, and you know, you could put that into kind of like a little cute little movie thing, I guess. I don't know what his intentions were. However, when he saw this creature moving toward the scene, he put the camera back in regular video mode so he could film whatever this was and hopefully to get kind of a cool silhouette shot of this animal as it went by the sunrise. And I don't know. It's so inconclusive. It's so difficult. And I've watched this thing slow. I've watched it fast. I've just looked at it from different angles. I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's hard to really discern exactly. And right now there are two sides on the fence. One side, and it usually is, one side always says, well, that's real. And the other side always says, well, that's fake. It doesn't matter if it's a ghost video, cryptid video, UFO video. You always have those two sides and a few people that kind of fall into the cracks and crevices in between. Now, on one side, I'm absolutely convinced this is genuine footage of the thylacine, hands down. And on the other side of the fence, people are claiming that this is more than likely a dog or dingo with an injured pelvis or rear leg that makes it appear to hop or move its hindquarters in an odd way that some feel suggests that it, again, is the long-lost marsupial. And there are some that are speculating. This is just out there, and I kind of see where they're coming from. Some that are speculating that this is CGI and thus a hoax. That's a pretty bold statement. And I mean, think about that. Calling the guy out. He's a professional photographer. He's a teacher. He's an author, and you're accusing him of fraud. Think about that for a second. And as you think about that, I want to let you know that you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And if you missed Crypto Kid Radio Show like I did last night, I don't know why I keep missing it. I'm just doing so much work when I get home from work. I always miss it. So I always try to make it up. I'll listen to it when I'm redoing all of my links and stuff tonight. But he's on Monday nights. So 8 p.m. Eastern, check his show out. Very brilliant young mind in the world of cryptozoology. A very fresh take on cryptozoology as well. He's not tainted by years of hoaxes and all these things that the rest of us have to have endured. And he's paving his own path. So if you're into cryptozoology, you definitely want to listen to Colin Schneider and the Crypto Kid Radio Show. And tomorrow night, Wednesday night, you can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson. She is going to have Rosalind Bown from Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters Academy and a regular on the paranormal convention circuit. Again, Paranormal Experience with host Cat Hobson tomorrow night. And that's 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, Wednesday night again, right here on WCJVRadio.com. Funny story. Well, yeah, I guess I'll talk about it. I first met Roslyn back in 2013, back in we were doing a spring Pennsylvania Bigfoot was in the camping adventure, PA Bigfoot Society outing. And they invited all sorts of people. Roslyn was out there. There was a bunch of other people. And, you know, I let her know, hey, I don't like those shows. I don't like those paranormal shows. And just kind of just said it how it was. And it was interesting to kind of hear her take or hear her side from the inside of being on these shows. It was really interesting. And it was a great experience to hang out with her all weekend, which is weird to hang out with a ghost person out in the woods looking for signs of Bigfoot. But it was an experience to hang out with her that weekend, and it was a lot of fun. So I'll be tuning into that show tomorrow night. She's just an awesome person. Everybody, she gets along with everybody. She's just a wonderful personality and a great person. A lot of knowledge, a lot of experience. So you want to listen to that tomorrow night. And we're going to go back out to Australia. Pack your bags. And we are talking about this gentleman, Paul Day, who shot this video of the thylacine, purportedly of a thylacine, running across where he was filming a sunrise. And which is weird because the sun was already up. I don't know. There's a few kind of weird things about it, but I'm not calling you out, Paul. Now, people have said that this is CGI and it's a hoax. Now, to this accusation, Paul said within his YouTube comments, quote, "Oh, it's real, all right. A few people have claimed it's fake, but I stake my reputation for producing original content on it being absolutely legit footage," unquote. Drop the mic. He's very adamant that this is what he saw. It's not fake. It's not CGI. It does look a little weird, but I think it's just the good, actual good camera equipment he has. It's not this junk that a lot of people film all this stuff on half the time. But the sad thing, the downside to all this is you can't really compare it to a thylacine, which is what you would do in a situation like this, because we do not have footage of a galloping thylacine to compare this footage to. The last living thylacine died at the Hobart Zoo on September 7th, 1936, and the last wild thylacine known to be shot was in 1930 in Tasmania. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, and in the context of this video being deemed a thylacine, probably the biggest obstacle, other than the lack of supporting evidence, which is pretty much the nail in the coffin, is that the thylacine is thought to have died out on mainland Australia about 2,000 years ago, give or take. That's a long time. Now, thylacines were hunted to extinction in Tasmania, hence the Tasmanian tiger moniker. And again, similarly to Bigfoot videos and other footage shot of ambiguous creatures, there's not enough information in the video to state one way or the other if this is definitely a fox, dingo, dog, or even a thylacine without some sort of further supporting evidence. I don't know. I mean, my take is that it looks to me like it could potentially be a dog that has it could be a mangy dog because it doesn't really seem to have a lot of fur on its tail, but definitely some sort of hip issue or leg issue that's causing it to hop or hobble strangely. Not too far out of the realm of possibility. And the Thylacine Awareness Project, you know, they've been hot in the news the last few months, putting out a lot of, I would say, highly questionable videos of the purported thylacine. They're hot on the heels of this video. Yeah. And again, I don't think there's enough conclusive proof either way. I mean, it's a silhouette. We're shooting into the sun. You really can't get enough detail. And I think that's why people are claiming that this is fake or a hoax. I mean, the guy was just in the right spot at the right time. And that's really all you can say about that. And, well, I'll go back. Get you the link here. I'll throw that in the chat room. There's a lot of links here. There's three separate ones I have. But I'll throw in, I'll just throw in the YouTube video. Why not? And you guys can check that out at your leisure whenever you want. And it's a pretty cool video. It's just, you know, it's only a few seconds long, but they kind of repeat it, zoom in, do all those fancy schmancy things. And it's still cool to watch. And we're going to go from Australia. We're going to stay out there in the Pacific. And we're going to talk about Amelia Earhart. Now, I talked about the Amelia Earhart story back on the June 27th episode of the Paranormal News Insider. In that special bone-sniffing dogs, how cool is that? Bone-sniffing dogs have been dispatched to Nikumaroro Island, where it is thought that Earhart and Fred Noonan may have been able to survive after their plane crashed and disappearance of them on July 2nd of 1937. Well, the dogs did discover an area near a tree that indicated that they found the presence of bone materials. Uh-oh. Now, archaeologists dug up the site but were unable to find bone fragments. They're still collecting soil samples for analysis that they can find some fragments that were large enough to contain some DNA. That would hopefully not only validate this hypothesis, but finally bring a conclusion on one of the most mysterious disappearances of the 20th century. And that's a reach. It's a really long reach, what they're trying to do. It's unfortunate, you know, that they went out there with the dogs. It was probably their best opportunity to find any bones at all, which is kind of weird because there were people living on this island for a couple of decades after this incident. So I don't know, people die. So I don't, maybe somebody died on the island, but when you're talking about an ecosystem like the South Pacific, like that, it's would really be hard for anything to survive out there over time with, there's not a lot of animals there. Obviously it's a little island. It's part of, well, it's too small. There's not like raccoons and other bone eating animals that are running around there, but just due to decomposition, due to storms, the ocean life, getting a hold of this stuff and it just decomposing over time. You know, this island is one of the leading theories, or I should say hypotheses, in this disappearance of Amelia Earhart. This Nikumaroro Island, where they think that they landed, has been one of the hotspots. But another hypothesis I mentioned this TV show that was on the History Channel, and Sunday night I kind of forgot about it, but I put out a reminder through the Paranormal News Insider Facebook site, which is also tied to Twitter, a reminder about the show that was coming up that night. I was on at 9 o'clock. It was really long. Really long. But lots of information jammed into the show. Again, Sunday night on the History Channel. And the special was called Amelia Earhart, The Lost Evidence, which sounded to me kind of like those other shows that they had that were fictitious. You know, the Mermaid Show and the Megalodon Show. But anyway, the kind of premise of this is that they think that Earhart and Noonan died in Japanese custody after crash landing in the Marshall Islands. And during the week, a photograph began circulating essentially as a teaser for the episode that purportedly showed Earhart sitting near a dock looking toward a ship that appears to be towing a plane on a barge with Noonan purportedly standing nearby. In this theory, it is thought that they landed in the Marshall Islands and were subsequently arrested as spies and ultimately died in custody. Many people think that this last scenario would be least likely despite the photograph. And those who say it appears to be the real deal, again, people on two sides of the fence, as always. Now, I'll give you kind of my impressions of this show. It seemed to paint a lot of things as fact, such as a photograph that was said to not be tampered with, and another person matched Noonan and Earhart from other photographs, despite there being any real detail in it. You know, first they claim, well, there's not a whole lot of detail, but then they just drew lines from shoulder to different portions of the body, and wow, it's the same. Well, yeah, you could pretty much put anybody in that same position, and it would have been correlating pretty close to that. So I don't think that was really a defining experiment to validate it, but they seemed pretty convinced that, wow, we proved this photo is definitely them. They were stating that very matter-of-factly, which once you go down that road and once you say that this photo is definitively these people, then all the other things that they talk about throughout the show conveniently fall into place. And it's more easily believed because they've already established that this photo is them, which it's not proven. It's not at all. Despite this TV show, it's still highly questionable. Even the validity of this photograph, there is no definitive time frame of when this photo was taken, despite them saying, well, there's a telegraph pole or telephone poles and this and that. And, you know, World War II came through and destroyed a lot of areas on that island, but we don't really know. The show is just, it's like watching Ancient Aliens, where they just throw so many things at you and claim it as fact, even though you can argue each point. But when you get thrown so many things at the same time, it's really hard. You kind of drowned in their belief in each piece and each part is definitely tied into this case. Now, initially paint the picture, the photograph and story of Earhart and Noonan being captured by the Japanese was a governmental cover-up. So it starts out with a conspiracy theory, which gets a lot of other people buying into this. And the fact that they were able to crack codes, the U.S. government was able to crack these codes being used in communication. And they didn't want this information to get out, that they were able to crack these codes. So they say that that's why they just kind of left them there. That's one piece of speculation. The other speculation was that they were spies for Japan or for the United States or one way or the other. It's just confusing. They just threw so many things at you, and it was a little confusing. Other things they said that Caucasians were not allowed in the Marshall Islands just prior to World War II, which they contradicted. If you watch the entire thing and paid attention to that, that struck me as odd because I know that's not true. Historically speaking, there were Americans all throughout the South Pacific, Caucasians, English, American. And they later on in the show, they actually said that there were a certain number of Caucasians, even in the Marshall Islands, that, you know, could have been one of these people. They could have mistaken Earhart for one of these other people. Well, if there's no Caucasians, then how could there be a mistake? But anyway, they also said that the Marshall Island natives know of the story of Earhart crashing and even have a stamp to commemorate that occurrence. So there you go. There's another matter of fact moment. This validates everything that she was truly here, because here it is. There's a picture on a stamp. Wow. There it is. Proof. But in actuality, the stamps that were created in 1987, issued for the 50th anniversary of the flight, this is actually based on speculation from a book that came out in 1983 by Vincent V. Loomis titled Amelia Earhart, The Final Story, where they painted this picture. Again, the same thing that these guys are following, that she crashed in the Marshall Islands, was taken hostage, and shipped out to a location that was owned, or I should say operated by the Japanese military at the time. So that's kind of where the Marshall Islands actually got the idea for the stamp. It wasn't because people remembered all this. And interestingly enough, they did find some people that claim to have seen her. They don't say definitively it's these people, but they just, I don't know. Again, they just kind of paint the picture how they want to paint it. Saipan, that's where she, they said she was taken to. So they were taken to Saipan from the Marshall Islands and imprisoned before being executed. The information is often disputed by those who support the Japanese hypothesis. The Japanese even say, we didn't do that. We would tell you if we did. That never happened. So that's kind of weird. We're kind of friends with them now, so I don't see why they would why would they continue to bury that information? And yeah, the History Channel painted a very, very convincing picture of an investigation that found piece after piece of evidence. And you would think that, okay, we have this picture. We're convinced that this is this. Let's go here. Let's do this. And it seems very linear. But in reality, they already had all these pieces. They already had, you know, this hypothesis has already been around for a long time. They just kind of put it all together to make it look like it was occurring as an investigation and being out on location in the areas to make it more convincing. Now, was there really a cover-up and conspiracy over Earhart's capture and untimely death? I don't know. That's kind of a reach to claim that your government was involved in something like that. I mean, we should also remember that there are similar stories that people saw airplane wreckage, again, which I just mentioned, on Nikumar Oro Island. There was also pieces of purported aircraft found there, evidence that people feel strongly that this is the answer to Earhart and Noonan's fate, that they landed on this other island. And also consider there's a lot of other crazier hypotheses out there, that one claims that she and Noonan were abducted by aliens. The plane just disappeared. It vanished. Or that it just vanished in the Pacific Islands version of the Bermuda Triangle. Again, also that Earhart and Noonan were spies for the U.S., where the crash was their way of covering up. Well, they're dead because they crashed, but they really went into hiding. And one of these that gained a lot of attention in the early 1980s was that Earhart was alive and well living in New Jersey. That turned out not to be true, obviously. And a variety of other hypotheses have been presented over the years by various experts. Experts. And what you can't see is me doing the air quotes thing, experts. In reality, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, I mean, I would love nothing more than to be able to sit here behind the mic and tell you that they have found Amelia Earhart's remains and we could patch together the story and put this to bed once and for all and have the information and settle this major dispute. I would love to say that. But the sad reality is, more than likely, most logical conclusion is that the plane crashed in the Pacific Ocean and the two of them more than likely drowned. Especially since no tangible evidence has ever been found, despite a major search, one of the largest searches ever recorded in that time frame. And again, they didn't have the technology we do. They don't have satellites. They didn't launch anything into space in the 1930s. So they didn't have access to the information, the ability that we do nowadays to do search and rescues. So it's not far-fetched that they couldn't find them. It's just such a large expanse of area that they could have been lost in. And if they crash in the ocean, not a whole lot of fuel left on that plane, possibly. Not going to be a large slick at the surface of the ocean. If the plane sank, you know that it would be over. You wouldn't find anything. I mean, it's romantic to think that they might have survived on one island or another, but with way more ocean than land, it's a rational scenario. And it's, again, the highest probability of being the answer to all of that. And I forgot to do. I was going to do this before. Let's see if this is going to work. I was going to put this little. Let's see if this works. There you go. There's a little map there I put in the chat room, and you can see this the little triangle thingy-majiggy is pointing to the Maroro Island, and you can see Hawaii there and the Marshall Islands. So it kind of gives you a map of the area. That look, there's Australia. So they got from somewhere in New Guinea, and they were flying toward Hawaiian Islands, but they got lost. You can click on the image. If you're in the chat room, yeah, you can make it bigger. Yeah. Just want to make use of this chat room. It's fun. It's cool. And links. I'll give you a link here. Here's a link. Throw that in the chat room. So these guys are getting information here through the chat room that you're not obviously can't get through the air here. But I do post all of these links that I'm talking about during the week after the show has aired. I don't do it beforehand. I do it afterward. I don't know. It's just kind of what I do. And you can follow along on these stories and get the further information on these stories. I don't do it beforehand because sometimes these stories evolve and the information changes. Yeah, sometimes they do evolve after the show. But it's the way I do it. So we're going to talk some crop circles. We're going to go from the Pacific Ocean all the way over to England. So pack your bags. The county of Wiltshire in England is cracking down on crop circles. The county, which is two-thirds rural area, contains many farms and is also home to Stonehenge. I'm sure you've heard of that. A police spokesman explained, quote, "They might seem harmless, but they actually have a huge negative impact on the hardworking landowners and farmers whose crops are damaged. Creating a crop circle is criminal damage and an offense. The damage caused means a loss in revenue to the farmer and landowner. They also have to deal with civil trespass issues on their land after a crop circle has been created when members of the public come out without permission to view the circle. It has also been known for individuals to pose as part of a charity or as the landowner at the site of crop circles and attempt to take donations from people viewing the crop circle." Unquote. Yes. People do that. That's crazy. Police are urging farmers to report the circles and to note vehicles and license plates of anyone who arrives to begin recording it, such as with a drone, which I guess is the best way to do it anymore. They ask that landowners to state whether they will allow the public access or not, and if they intend on cutting out the circle. The article mentions three places to submit their crop circle information: cropcircleaccess.com, cropcircleconnector.com, and temporarytemples.co.uk. If it were me and I was a farmer, I'm not going to report it to anybody. And I'm going to be sitting out there on my tractor with a shotgun. Yeah. They also urge anyone who witnesses someone in the act of creating a circle on private property to contact police immediately. And yeah, I think this is long overdue. I mean, they've talked about this for a while. I've heard of similar warnings, but they really pushed this out into the general public. And it's certainly a great step forward in slowing down and deterring the production of the destructive man-made crop circles. And if you believe that these are created by extraterrestrials or some weird forces, then, you know, it's also a good thing, because then it's going to curtail people doing this as well. And that's your news. But I do have, hold on, whoa, don't go anywhere. I saw you. You were going to click off the app. I know you're going to go watch the baseball All-Star game. But I do have one more piece of information, and that is the book of the week this week. And I go in a different direction this week. I've done this before, especially with this particular magazine. Yes, this is a magazine. The magazine is the book of the week this week. I can't change it to the magazine of the week this week. But I think this is cool. This caught my eye. And occasionally, if you peruse the newsstands, you see that National Geographic occasionally does some really cool special editions. Some are cooler than others, I guess, depending upon what you like. But the one they have out right now that caught my attention is called The Next Earth, What Our Worlds Can Teach Us About Other Planets. And it's a really, really informative magazine full of articles that gets you up to date on the research and developments that are going on in space and discoveries of new planets, discoveries of all these new things are popping up in the news each and every week, a lot of which we do talk about here on the show. So that's why I chose it as the book of the week. I don't know if that's going to work, that link. Yeah, it works. It works. Cool. Much cheaper online for some reason. If you go through Amazon, $4. Wow. I paid for 13. Well, but I could read mine right away. And again, this is called The Next Earth, What Our World Can Teach Us About Other Planets. And a majority of this thing is, you know, it's a regular size magazine. 112 pages. So yeah, $4. I got ripped off, but it's great. I mean, it's chock full of articles. And again, it does start out looking at Earth and looking at some of the newer things that we've discovered about our planet that can, again, teach us about other planets. There's 9 chapters, and it does kind of build from Earth to understand other worlds. It talks about tectonic plates and some of the, you know, geographical things that happen here on Earth, volcanoes, floods, how rivers, lava, and other things carve out the planet and shape us. And it does go into what caught my eye, Chapter 8, Are We Alone? The Search for Life. But it's not what you think. It's about, you know, microscopic life, small little pieces of bacteria. They call them extremophiles that are able to survive in very, very harsh conditions, extremely hot or extremely cold conditions here on Earth, which is positive that we're able to potentially find life on other planets. Because if they can exist in super negative degree temperature and ice and well below the surface without hardly any oxygen, or in extreme temperatures reaching hundreds of degrees, then maybe, just maybe, these creatures can survive out in space as well. And obviously, one of the major theories is that life came from outer space. So it's, you know, it doesn't get too hokey like that, but it's basically just about science. It's not overwhelming with scientific terminology. It's really, I was hoping it would have more of this, but it's very basic. It's very straightforward. But it's very informative, paints a very simplistic picture of the hope that we can find other planets out there similar to us, and we can potentially find life. But it's not about finding life. It's just about finding other planets out there, hopefully, that we don't go and destroy like we've done this one. But it's a very, very informative magazine, and it was well worth the $14 I spent, and you can get it for $4 on Amazon. It's only going to be on the front cover, it says here, display until August 25th, 2017. And it is one of the Time Incorporated specials. I love these specials. I buy these things all the time. I think the Bigfoot one was the first one that I really got excited about. But The Next Earth, What Our World Can Teach Us About Other Planets. Very informative magazine with a lot of great information about finding worlds out there. And with that, that's it. That's your show. But I'll be here next week. Don't worry. Next week is another show. The 18th, July 18th. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Interesting stuff occurring. I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen in the next week or so. So big thanks to Cindy, my producer, for all the hard work she does behind the scenes. And to Dita and Paul. I don't see Paul. Where's Paul? I don't see him. He's not there. Big thanks to Jim Mallard of the Mallard Report, TMR247.com. Check out his show. And anyone else that's out there listening to the show live or otherwise, I know you're alive, but if you're listening to this as a podcast. It's already recorded. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You are the reason why I continue to do this each and every week right here on WCJVradio.com. And I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.